White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. In association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And now by Audible.com and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, I feel a little bit better this week than I did just a few short days ago. How are you feeling?
Just about. I feel better too. I can't imagine why. I don't know, had something to do with this gigantic offensive explosion we witnessed last night.
Well, there's one big question that hangs in the air about that, and that's the question that you and I cannot answer tonight, but the course of the next few weeks will determine. And that is, have we solved our offensive problems, or did we just get a healthy serving of some white meat and dressing and gravy? You know what I mean, right? I mean,
yes.
have we really got the offense rolling, or is it a difference between playing Clemson's defense and playing Arkansas State defense? And how much difference did it make that Gus did exactly what he said he was going to do and basically ran a conventional Gus Malzahn offense rather than an even more unconventional Gus Malzahn offense? What's your feeling on that right now?
I think running the one quarterback offense made a huge difference. Now, I think there's a lot of other things they worked on, too. I mean, they played some players they didn't play in the other game.
That's for sure.
And obviously a big part of it is the difference between Clemson and Arkansas State. I mean, on the defensive line, it was a huge difference. And just the speed and the tackling ability of the defense, there was a lot of difference from Clemson. And, I mean, Clemson's defense is one of the most well-coached in the country. So they're always in the right position. They know what's coming before you do it. So in that part, I think it is a big step down. But I also think, like, again, other than Alabama, you know, that's the best – Clemson's the best defense we're going to play probably. So I think the biggest thing is the offense played well and the one quarterback thing really worked. Sean looked great. And I think the team has a lot of confidence in the offense now going forward, which is important.
Yeah, that well, yeah. Even if, you know, like if you were going to break it down into percentages, and you were going to say that, like, even if like 70% of the offense looking good Saturday was playing Arkansas State, and 30% was them getting their woo-hoo together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that's still 30% that's good, and it's the other 70% still gives you some more confidence.
Right. The confidence part matters.
Right. That's what we talked about last week. I mean, that's what we talked about on our last show, was that there's that whole mental aspect to it where it's not an Xbox.
Yep.
Right. So regardless of whether, you know, the offense just found their footing and got rolling, or whether it's just that playing, you know, not a great team maybe at the right time, it still can only help, right? I mean, I only see good things coming out of this. And we didn't get anybody really injured or anything like that either, which is good.
It's very important. And so that you're right. We had the offensive explosion, the team had confidence, and nothing bad happened in terms of injuries or that kind of stuff. So,
well, first up, we got to say that it didn't happen against Clemson, but finally, 2 weeks into the season, we got to see this unveiled, John.
What are you
some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
You know who that refers to, don't you?
Cameron Petway.
The tenderizer. I was so excited. And it was so funny because in his press conference after, which hopefully I'm going to try to get a clip or two of at the beginning of the show, but in his press conference after the game, Gus was talking like this was this surprising, unexpected thing. He's like, well, I got to find the exact quote, but he said something to the effect of, you know, yeah, well, Petway did pretty good. So if we could get him and Kerryon Johnson out there both at the same time, hey, maybe that would be a clever new idea. And I'm going, we've been talking about this the whole summer. How is this a clever new idea? How are we, you know, he had to have been thinking about it before now. He's got to be being disingenuous a little bit, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, we've been talking about that for months, the idea of Cameron Petway out there with Kerryon Johnson together being like the thunder and lightning duo.
Well, and I think they're not going to play them a lot together. I think they're going to be the change of pace for each other. Mm-hmm. But I think Petway showed more explosiveness than I thought he had.
Oh, yeah. And speed.
Mm-hmm.
He has a high gear there.
He went through the holes, and I mean, he didn't just run over guys. I mean, he had a little bit of move to him, and he ran away from people, which was exciting.
And meanwhile, Kerryon Johnson has have we had a running back that could find the corner of the end zone dependably like that since Cadillac?
No.
I mean,
he has the ability to go for the pylon in a way that very few running backs do.
They can't stop him in the middle of the field. He's always going to get loose from their trap. One might even say,
well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
Well, no, you don't. He always gets to the edge. Remember, we would be on like the 1 yard line, and most teams would send a running back diving over. And Cadillac would go from the 1 yard line, take the handoff, and just sprint to the pylon.
Mm-hmm.
It was so funny. He would much rather run horizontal and beat you to the corner than just go straight into the line. And it's not that Kerryon necessarily is quite like that, but if we're on like the 8, 9, 10 yard line, put him in the wildcat, and he seems to always score.
He's really good at it. I mean, I think he has a real nose for it, and I think that formation really works with him.
It does. It really does. I was wondering, you know, last season we did that a lot. Last season we had Kerryon in the wildcat a lot, and I just kept thinking of all the various players on the team. He's not the one I would have expected to be the wildcat guy, but, man, they really do like him, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And I think you could see, I mean, the play – you know, the first huge play of the game where Sean was falling down and flipped him the ball, and then he was trapped against the sideline with about 8 defenders in front of him. He reversed field and then ran all the way down. He hurdled a guy and scored. Go back and watch that again, especially like the part, like the field level part where he reverses direction. It's amazing. I mean, it literally is like a video game looking kind of thing. Like, he's going one way, and then all of a sudden he's going full speed the other way, and the Arkansas State team is still going the first direction, and Kerryon's coming back the other way, and these guys haven't even, you know, started to change direction yet.
Right. That's right. It was amazing.
I think we needed some explosiveness from the running back position, and I think he really showed that he can deliver that, and that's huge.
And the other big running threat we had was old Sean Dual Threat White himself.
Can we call him the snowboarder?
I have to find something for that, an audio for that. But
I don't know. Every time he runs, I'm like, oh my gosh! He's not Nick Marshall. You know, he's not gliding out there or anything. He's kind of looks like he's, you know, running for his life sometimes, but
he's kind of flailing around, but he's going.
He does. And I worry about him running against, you know, SEC defenses, but we had to show that threat, and he did. And I think it's going to make a difference.
Yeah. they had to have done it for two reasons in this game, because it wasn't vital, I don't think, in this game. You did it in this game for two reasons. One, to let him get some practice at it and kind of, you know, get a feel for it, but also to put it on tape, right?
Yeah, because now, you know, when Auburn's running their offense, you can't not have somebody, you know, be thinking about that and be watching for him running the ball. So it's just pulling them a little bit away from, you know, where, if, you know, if we give it to carry on or we're doing something else with it, is keeping them away from that and making them focus on Sean, which is what we want. Or if they ignore him, you know, do those things, he clearly can get a few yards when we need him.
Let me see if I've got it. Hold on a minute. No, I got it. Hold on. Bear with me. I think I've got it here. Oh, you're just hearing the crowd. Okay, Johnson catches the flip. He's reversing field. He's going back the other way. He's breaking tackles. He's going down the left sideline. Sean White is throwing blocks. And he hurdles the defender into the end zone. Touchdown, Auburn! Kerryon Johnson from way outside. All right, well, that was kind of neat. I thought there would actually be some, you know, voiceover on that when I clicked it, but it was just the... It was just the raw video. So you got to react.
You did hit on one of the key parts of that play is that Sean White, you know, was falling down and flipped him the ball, got up, ran ahead of him, and tried to block some guys.
You know what? I knew that he flipped him the ball, and I knew that he was downfield later attempting to block or get in the way of the defense. I hadn't put two and two together, as strange as that sounds, and thought Sean had to get up and hustle down there to do that.
Well, that's, not just that, but that's our starting quarterback being a lead blocker, which I don't know how I feel about. But
well, I did see that Gus said he flinched. Was that the verb he used?
Yes.
He said he flinched when he realized that was Sean down there as the lead blocker.
But it goes back to that human element we talked about, and the players love that stuff.
You know what? You know what Gus is going to start doing if Sean starts being the lead blocker on these plays?
But
smoke weed every day.
Just had to find a way to work that one in. That was too good. All right. So, yeah. So the running game, I mean, we got Thunder and Lightning. We got Dual Threat Snowboard Boy. We got the Tenderizer and, you know, the one I haven't even played.
Carry on my wayward son.
Man, what a great game for him. And two guys with 100-yard games. Now, I was reading a statistic that said that we hadn't had 200-yard backs in the same game since Bo and Lionel.
No.
I was thinking it didn't, right?
It was two guys get their first 100-yard games,
oh,
I think, since those two. That's what the stat was.
Okay. Well, Kerryon is well on his way to a 1,000-yard season if everything keeps going well, because he had almost 100 against Clemson, and he had well over 100 in this game, so he's already up over 200 yards with, you know, 10 games to go. But we could see Petway get there too, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah. He had 152 yards in that game.
Dang. So, yeah, when in the national championship year, Cam had over 1,000, and I want to say Dyer had over 1,000 too, didn't he?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, well, that's the running game. Anything else about the running game? We talked a little bit about Sean White too.
Well, we did get to see both Cam Martin and Malik Miller.
That's all.
Which was exciting.
Yeah, the fourth quarter was almost like a different game. You had different players. The game was already over, you know. I kind of forgot about the fourth quarter. We need to talk about that.
It was exciting. Malik Miller has got some burst. I liked what I saw out of him.
Absolutely. And, Cam Martin looked okay. I mean, he didn't get a lot of chances, or if he did, I wasn't looking.
He didn't have a lot of carries. I mean,
but they worked him in a little bit. And, of course, at quarterback, you had JF3.
Yes.
And we saw what we thought we were going to see, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. And he didn't carry it last week, but he carried it this week, and he's exactly what you thought. He's very quick. Man. He gets around the corner.
Good luck.
Not a big guy, but he's fast with the ball in his hands. And it clearly gives the defense a problem. So I think you know, having there are times when bringing him out and putting him in the game, especially if the defense is tired, been wearing on him all day, I think could really make a difference. So,
yeah, it is interesting too because once the defense is a little bit tired and you bring him in fresh, good Lord, trying to catch him when you're tired.
It's also the other thing is it really does open up holes for the running backs because the defense wants to not play in as tight. They want to spread out a little bit and try to keep containment on him. So then if we try to run kind of, you know, off tackle or up the middle, it does open up those things for the running backs when he's in the game. And you saw that there too. Like even though sometimes they knew it was coming, they couldn't get out there to the corner to stop him.
Right. It will be interesting to see what he does if he gets a chance against like a Texas A&M or LSU defense and defensive line, which I'm not sure he'll even get in the game against those two teams. If he does, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Let me rephrase that. If JF3 gets in the game against LSU or Texas A&M, it will either be very good or very bad.
I think we could see him in those games for four or five plays as, you know, as a change of pace thing, or just to not in a rotation kind of thing with Sean, but just a certain area of the field or, you know, just to mess with the other team, maybe.
Sean had a good passing game, didn't he?
He looks really sharp. I mean, throwing the ball, he looked great, and the receivers helped him. It's an exciting change of pace from last season.
John, the receivers caught the ball, and boy, did they catch the ball. I mean, they didn't like let it bounce off their hands or bounce off their helmets or all the, you know, that we've done the last year or so. So, speaking of the receivers, before we talk about Kyle Davis, wasn't it Kyle Davis had the great, there's so many.
Yes.
I'm just going to start saying, before we talk about Davis, and you can just figure out which one I'm talking about, we got to talk about, is it Will Hastings?
Yes.
Not anymore. It is Will the Weapon Hastings.
I was going to say Will Heisman Hastings.
Oh, well, let's make him a weapon, and then we'll run him for the
Heisman. I like it.
Yeah, Will the Weapon Hastings, who possible Heisman candidate. His story's pretty amazing, and there was. Did you read his story?
Mm-hmm.
I forwarded. There was a link. Yeah, basically saying that he had been a receiver in high school and was really, really good. But ended up no Division I schools offered him. And then Auburn offered him a preferred walk-on status. But when he got here, and I thought this was very interesting, Damian Craig didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up being a kicker. But they basically – did you not get this from the article? Like the minute Damian Craig left and Cody Burns came in as receivers coach – he moved to receiver.
Yep.
Wasn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So I keep – you know I love Damian Craig as a player, but I keep getting less and less disappointed that he is in LSU right now. And he's possibly going to be unemployed at the end of this year anyway, the way things are going over there. And hopefully we can do a little bit in 2 weeks to prompt that along.
Yep.
LSU tends to fire their coaches after they lose to Auburn.
And you're right. I mean, I like Damian. He's a good guy, and he's a good Auburn guy. But the receiver play has been excellent this season, and Cody Burns has done a great job. And Hastings is part of that. Like, he is tiny. But, you know,
he's like a BYU receiver.
Well, because he's white and he's so small, the guy everybody wants to go to is Wes Welker.
Yeah.
That he's Wes Welker, you know, on the Patriots and stuff. And Wes Welker was a slot receiver at Texas Tech, but was a great athlete, you know. And the story is, you know, that basically at the practices and stuff, and like the 10, I mean, everybody's like, he's this little scrawny guy. He can't be that good. He's a possession kind of guy. But like in the 10 yards or whatever, he's one of the two or three fastest guys on the team, if not the fastest.
He has a record for one of their drills.
Yeah. So
he's on the wall for one of their drills.
Yeah. So you know, in that in the shorter distance, he has a lot of speed and he's very elusive, and so he runs good routes and he catches the ball. So I'm excited to see what he can do, and it's great to have, you know, another good slot possession receiver, especially because Marcus Davis is going to be, you know, kind of doing other stuff more, I think, and less of the slot thing he did before. So I'm excited to see what Hastings could do. And if we get in situations where we need to throw the ball and get a first down, he's a guy they're going to look for.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me in a way of like some of the Oregon receivers in the past. That, you know, you look at them and you think, but then they end up doing great stuff. So that's just kind of neat. But, man, the big receiver, at least that one play, I believe it was Kyle Davis, one of our mini Davises, our freshman receiver, the one that's been hurt all year, right?
Yep.
He didn't look too hurt Saturday.
That was amazing. That was one of the best catches that stadium's ever seen.
Yeah, that was almost Lawyer Tillman-like, or even more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you saw the ball heading that way, I guess we're so used to underthrown balls in college football. I mean, honestly, you see a lot of underthrown long balls in college football. And I thought it was woefully overthrown. In other words, when I watch college football, a pass that is basically on target deep looks overthrown because so many of the passes are underthrown. You kind of get used to it. You see what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
What did you think when you saw it in the air?
Well, I thought there's two defenders there. That's a terrible decision.
Well, hold on. Now, I mean, I didn't think the two defenders had any more chance of catching it than Davis did.
No, so, but you I don't.
I wasn't worried about the interception. I was figuring it was going to land in the back of the end zone.
But you don't throw the ball at a guy that's got two defenders around it. That's what I thought.
Yeah. But he did it. Maybe he got it. I mean, that was
amazing.
That was Duke Williams in his prime, or Sammy Coates-esque in a way, or even better than that. So I feel pretty good about our freshman receivers. As Gus would say, yeah, they're going to be special. Because, I mean, we didn't really see Nate Craig. Did Nate Craig Myers have a play or two there somewhere?
He had one catch for 9 yards.
Okay. And we still haven't seen Eli Stove or Marquise McClain.
Yeah, McClain, I don't think we're going to see. I think he's in a red shirt, and Stove is maybe.
Stove is one of the ones they were saying the most about in fall practice, though, right?
Yeah, but we haven't needed him. I mean, Slayton is a guy who redshirted last year, who, you know, clearly is going to is starting and playing a lot.
Yeah,
and we saw kind of the first actual decent game of Tony Stevens' career. We've been waiting 4 years for that. So
that's exactly where I was going to go, is that Tony Stevens is emerging as a decent big receiver now. So if Marcus Davis didn't have the greatest game of his career, but he does a lot of things. He catches punts and stuff like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But Marcus Davis was okay. Tony Stevens was very good. Obviously, Kyle Davis had a moment. Hastings, I mean, it is kind of funny to think that we brought in this super-duper class of receivers, and at least two or three of them are kind of getting pushed out of the way by Hastings. But then he's a weapon, so what can you say?
There you go.
Anything else about the receivers?
No, I thought the blocking was – the blocking of the receivers and the offensive line was better this week. Yeah. I mean, some of that has to do with the opponent, but some of it has to do with them executing better.
That's the other thing you mentioned. We were talking about Cody Burns. I like how Hastings was saying that they love Cody Burns as their coach. That's very good. I mean, that we knew that would be we figured that would be the case, but apparently the players really do like him, so that's very good. I was afraid they wouldn't, you know, and would all transfer or something after Damian left. Anything else on offense before we head over to the other side of the ball?
No, it's exciting to see how much really good talent we have with offense and depth, a skill position guys. So,
yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I've always said in Gus's offense, it works the best when he's got one or two absolute superstars that he can kind of lean on, like a Trey Mason or Cam Newton or Nick Marshall or whatever. His offense takes a step back when everybody is pretty good, but there's no superstar on offense. This year, I feel like that's where we are. There's no superstar on offense, which is one of the reasons we lost to Clemson. But I feel like we've got enough. If we don't have a 10 out of 10 out there, we got enough eights that we ought to be able to do some damage.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's look at the defense. And, man, they had a pretty darn good showing, too. I was pleased with the defense in this game, with the exception of some of the secondary play in the middle of the field.
Yeah, they had that one long play pass that they kind of blew the coverage on. But, again, they really held them down. I mean, in the big picture,
yeah.
Especially compared to how much they've traditionally scored and how many yards they traditionally gained. So, we held them to 14 points. You know, they had 66 yards rushing.
But, you know, they got most of that, it seemed like, on that little quick pitch they were running on us at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
They were going out wide and trying to get us attacking the middle, and their receivers were blocking well on the edge, and so they were able – on the corner out there, and so they were able to get 5-6 yards every time they ran that. I thought they should – well, you know, they could have run it the whole game, but their running back kept getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. Like, those guys are getting beat up, you know, running that play, so.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they're kind of being isolated out there. They don't have any blockers or anything, really, other than the receiver, so. How do you grade the defense overall?
I mean, again, like, they gave up some yards, but not a ton. And they gave up 14 points. I was very happy. I mean, again, this is a team that, you know, offensively, Arkansas State, you know, puts up 30, 40 points a week most of the time. You know, look at their stats from last year and, you know, let's see how they did last year. They scored 20 against a good Missouri defense. They scored 40 against that Appalachian State team that we saw play Tennessee the other night. You know, the rest of their – I mean, in their conference is like 49, 49, 37, 48, 40, 59, 52, 55. So, that's like what their offense was doing. I mean, they didn't score a bunch against Toledo or Missouri or Southern Cal last year. So, I feel like the defense played well. I think the tackling was good. We had that one play, but we also, again, in the second half, we played a lot of guys. A lot of guys got in the game, got experience. You know, we got to see Marshall Taylor play some. You know, a lot of the good younger defensive linemen, like Derek Brown and those guys got a lot of time.
I heard Derek Brown's name get called a couple of times. Seemed like he had a pretty good game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Marlon Davidson had a good game. He made some plays. Mm-hmm. Andrew Williams, you know, who we kind of forget about because they have so much depth in defensive line. And at the end of the game, again, Marshall Taylor, John Broussard was out there, Daniel Thomas, those kind of guys were out there, you know, making plays. So feel pretty good about getting those young guys on defense some snaps. I think that was important before, you know, in case we have to throw them in a game in the deep water in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What about on the linebackers? I mean, it seems like the linebacker play has just really picked up this year.
I love Travis Williams. I mean, again, like we were talking about Cody Burns, Travis Williams has done an amazing job. Auburn's linebackers have been kind of mediocre for years.
Yep.
I mean, since 2010, honestly.
Since what's his name, our linebacker coach for 50 years.
Retired. Joe Witt.
Yeah, since Joe Witt retired.
And Travis Williams is the Joe Witt disciple.
Yeah,
he really does channel Joe Witt and the way he coaches these guys and relates to him. And I was really confused why Neal didn't play against Clemson because I thought this guy's experience and I'd seen the highlights of him and seen his stats. I thought we'd use him for sure, but I understand it now because Trey Williams is really good. He had a great game. Trey Williams did. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Davis is excellent. Darryl Williams is excellent. Atkinson played a good bit in this game. Those guys are fast, and they tackle well when they get to the ball. And they're in the right position. You know, they don't overrun the play. And they stand in the hole, and the defensive lineman occupies the offensive line. So when that running back shows up, the linebackers make the play. They take the guy out. And it's very refreshing. I love it. It's
a revelation.
I mean, it's a reason that this defense is – for real, and it's not a mirage or anything, is the linebacker play is much better. And I think, you know, that they can make plays both against spread teams and against the more physical teams we're going to play.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really – I'm really excited about this defense. the special teams also. I mean, we had two kickers basically score touchdowns, which is kind of neat. But our all-world kicker, we've got a kicker, man. We've all got good kickers, but we've got the kicker of all kickers, I feel like, this year. He is just money.
And it's important. Again, the team has confidence. We know in a close game, we need field goals. He can deliver. He can handle the pressure. He's got the distance. And he's a weapon on kickoffs, too.
Well, and he didn't just deliver field goals this time. He delivered a touchdown. He did the play. He did the Damon Duvall play from 1999 LSU.
The behind-the-head flip by the holder. I was so shocked when we did that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe we did that. But, it again, like we were talking about with Sean running the ball, it forces other teams now to defend that and not, you know, rush like crazy to try and block it, to leave a couple guys back just in case. So
it's
important to do that. And it was, you know, it's a good reward to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for everything he does for the team, to give him a chance to shine like that. And the other thing I was going to say about special teams is our punting game was great this week. We had zero punts.
Yeah, that's the best kind of punting game ever right there.
That's it.
I wanted to say about Carlson, one other thing is he got that touchdown like that, and he didn't even have to bleach his hair blonde. remember Duvall?
Yes.
those are the days. That was pretty cool. Yeah, no punts. A field goal became a touchdown. That's what you like right there. Nothing bad. And the kickoffs.
Yes.
I mean, I heard Arkansas State's coach saying, you know, my gosh, the kickoffs, you know, part of their game plan was using their kick return. And, like, we didn't get to ever use that. That what was so funny. He's like, we have good kick returners and good punt returners, and we didn't get to use any of that in the entire game.
It's funny, but it's really – that's a big part of their team because Eccles, Looper, and those guys are really good kickoff returners. They're big play guys, and they only got the one at the start of the game or whatever. That was it.
That was it. Well, I guess every time we kick off, but – But they never got to return.
But I'm saying when we kicked off,
yeah.
I mean, I haven't looked at how many returns they got, but
not much.
They had one kickoff return all night for 25 yards.
Well, I saw him say that he started telling his kick returners to get further back in the end zone on the chance they might actually get to run one out. In other words, he was saying, you know, even if it looks like you don't have a chance, take a chance because we need something.
Yeah, do it anyway.
Do it anyway, yeah. I just love it. That's funny. So, yeah, to kind of sum up the offense, the defense, the special teams, you put it as the joy of a blowout win and not stressing about the ending. And absolutely, I mean, it's been fun. It's fun. I mean, we don't know how good Arkansas State is. They have been a pretty good team over the last 5 to 10 years. There's no doubt about it. And they've won their conference more often than not the last few years. I don't know how this team stacks up to most. But I'll just sum up my last thoughts on this game this way. Ask Georgia this week. Ask Tennessee last week. Right? Ask LSU. Ask any of these teams that have struggled with a quote-unquote lower, you know, team about – you know, how good they felt after those games, and then how do we feel after this game? I mean, you know, you look at the only other team, I mean, Texas A&M pretty well dismantled Prairie View, which is kind of disconcerting since we play them in a few days. But, I mean, I look at what Georgia did with Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at, you know, some of these other games, Tennessee with Appalachian State. I feel pretty good. I don't care what level the football they're playing at. I feel pretty good because it could have been Nicholls State, Georgia. It could have been.
Well, it could have been South Alabama beat Mississippi State last week.
Yeah, I knew there was another one I was forgetting. Exactly. So I was surprised LSU played as well as they did. We're going to get to it in a bit. But LSU played as well as they did against Jacksonville State. And I love that they're – I may forget this. I want to say it now. Their quarterback that they are going bananas over in LSU – they think he's like the second coming of, you know, Musburger or whatever his name was. Did you see what his passing completions out of his overall passes were?
No.
Okay. Did you see or hear anything about the LSU Jacksonville State?
I know they started this guy who transferred from Purdue, Effling or something. But
yes. And I mean, they rallied around him. They call, you know, he saved the day. He is the man. They love him. He won the game for him. He was 6 of 14 for 100 yards and one interception and one touchdown.
Ooh.
I think that the last two is right. I know he was 6 of 14 for like 100 yards.
Against a 1AA team.
Against a, and he is the man now. That just, I feel like it should be Saturday. Should have some kind of a something about that. It would be funny. But anyway, I don't. All right, we'll get to that. Couple of news items. Landon Rice, what is the deal there? Do we know anything about what happened to him? He's just off the team?
Yeah, there are rumors that he did some dumb stuff, but no, he's gone. He is out.
So it might be him rather than us.
It's him.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that Gus was very reluctant to talk about him.
And yeah, because I think the rumor is he did some dumb stuff. And
okay. All right. Fair enough. So. We all do dumb stuff from time to time.
But I liked him. I want a good tight end, and I had a lot of hope for him. I'd heard good stuff about him as a player, but you know, apparently him as a person is not the same thing. You hope he gets things straightened out and does better.
To be fair, somebody with the name Landon Rice should probably hang out with Grayson Lambert.
You watch out. He's from Georgia.
He's the hounds.
TJ Neal.
Didn't play against Clemson, tweeted about his frustration, and they deleted it, but everybody asked the coaches about it, and then Gus benched him for this week. So
didn't dress out. Do you think he didn't dress out because of the tweets?
Yes. That is not how you do that. That is a no. You do not second guess the coach's playing time decisions on social media. That's a no-no.
We're not going to have any distractions this year. They're not going to be any distractions. We're not going to have any.
Nope.
You can. I hear there's a running back that used to play for us that's got needs a roommate. You could probably go live with him if you tweet anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
I mean, and look, we've been playing a lot of teams that spread you out and three receiver stuff. When we get to the LSUs, you know, where we have to play three linebackers instead of two linebackers, I think he's probably going to play. So
I hope so. I mean, I hope. I can see that for sure. I mean, I could see needing another big Ten linebacker more against LSU than almost anybody else we play. Maybe Alabama. Well,
that's right.
Yeah, even more Alabama now. Jeremy Johnson was on the team, was off the team. Now, before we embrace this rumor that Jeremy Johnson's off the team, and I know he's back, if he ever left even, remember that we also were hearing that Sean White was off the team, and now he's our starting quarterback. So
yeah, I just don't believe this kind of rumor. I mean, I'm sure maybe it crossed his mind after he had a bad week and he was a senior and he was, you know, third team or whatever, but, you know.
Well, think about it this way. If Sean, God forbid, if Sean White should be injured and couldn't play at all, the only option we would have would be to put JF3 out there for the entire game with no backup.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what, regardless if Jeremy's not even playing at all, he needs to still be on the team because we need somebody with some experience running this offense other than JF3. And especially, you know, with JF3 being the only quarterback, because you can't exactly roll
Woody Barrett out there.
Woody or what's his name with the elbow?
Tyler Queen. Yeah. And you're right. Like if Sean had missed a whole game or whatever, and you got behind, I think I don't want to play Jeremy, but if you were behind in the game by a lot, playing Jeremy is better than playing JF3. So
yeah, I think that there's going to come a point in this season where they're going to have to decide if Woody Barrett is the third quarterback or not. Because they haven't decided whether to redshirt him yet.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a redshirt. I mean,
well, that would be preferable. Yeah, preferably Sean plays the whole season, and JF3 is the change of pace and backup, and then you know Woody can compete next spring. But you know, that's ideal, and the ideal doesn't always come true. You may need Barrett as the backup. Let's say that we're on a roll and we're like 7-2 or 8-1 or something, you know, you might rather go to Woody Barrett at that
point right.
season than stick Jeremy in there.
No, you're right. And if he's playing well and he's got the offense, then, you know, maybe you give him a shot if something happens. So
yeah. So, John, I got to talk for a second here about a little book about a certain player, and that player's name was Lorindo. Just want to remind folks that haven't picked it up yet that, you know, I'm a big reader of biography anyway. My favorite thing to get on Audible is biographies. I listen to biographies every night when I go to bed. I've listened to some of the ones I really enjoy, just for those that are interested. I've been listening to, of all things, well, I've got Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, really good book
mm-hmm.
by John Meacham. I've got on Audible. I've got a really good book about Nelson Rockefeller. Now you might say, "What? Why are you listen, Nelson Rockefeller?" He was a figure that was fairly large in American history when I was a kid, and I knew nothing about him. I mean, I knew that he was Gerald Ford's vice president for like 2 years, but that's all I really knew about him and his family, you know, being the Rockefellers. This is fascinating. You know, biographies let you look at somebody and their time. You know, it's why they say the life and times of so-and-so. And this really is the life and times of Lorindo, because you get not just, you know, an Auburn football coach. So you should trust me with these things. You?
I thought you were going down a rabbit hole there. I'm sorry.
It's fair. It's a fair concern, but I brought it back right back in. Smooth as glass. But you don't just get the story of an Auburn football coach. Not that that wouldn't be good enough, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. alone is a good book. But you get the times, and the times are amazing. You know, I've said before that I think probably some of my favorite parts of that book are the World War II parts. They have nothing to do with coaching or sports or anything. It's just what he's doing out there in the Pacific fighting the Japanese and driving the big boats and everything and going into Tokyo Bay. So I just can't recommend enough picking up Ken Ringer's Lorindo. It is on Amazon in paperback. I'm thinking eventually it's going to be on Kindle. I don't know why we haven't gotten it on Kindle already, but it's definitely in paperback. So go to Amazon and check it out. You can also go to whiterocketbooks.com and find it on there too. So while you're picking up Season of Our Dreams or Decades of Dominance. You know, by the way, at Dragon Con, we didn't talk about this last episode because we were just kind of focused very tightly on the main topic of the Clemson game and the offense and Gus and everything. We didn't really digress at all, but I want to point out, at Dragon Con last week, I actually had a reading session. And A, I want to thank everybody that came because a bunch of the people, I had a pretty full room. My reading in the Hyatt, I had a pretty full room.
Good.
People come in to hear me read from my books, and when it was over, I pretty much sold out of everything. I think I had maybe two books left when my signing was over, and I think I sold them at my book signing. They call it autograph session, but that sounds conceited to me. I just say my book signing session the next hour. But at the reading, a lot of the people that were there were Auburn people. They were Twitter people we know. And other Auburn-related people. And I just want to tell them, if you are a listener, thank you so much for coming. I hope you enjoyed it, and I appreciate you guys picking up. I sold a couple of Auburn books. I sold a whole bunch of my novels and stuff. But what I was going to say was I read some of Season of Our Dreams. You know, I threatened that I would. I said, if Auburn people come to that reading, I will read a selection from Season of Our Dreams. And so here's the funny thing. Here was the funny thing that happened, then we'll get back to our regular scheduled stuff. I was reading from that very last section in Season of Our Dreams, and there's a bit where I'm talking about, you know, here's what just happened, you know, and then we say, and then we say, you know, but that's done, and we look to the future, right? And the metaphor I use in that paragraph was, I said, but now one door closes and another door opens. And as I was reading, and now one, the door to our room opened and some guy stuck his head in and looked around. And then he went back out. And I said, and now one door opens and another closes. And the door went kablam. And everybody busted out laughing. And I said, you know, I couldn't have paid somebody to do that and it been any better than that. It was hilarious. Just totally coincidental. So,
And did you have some podcast listeners in there?
Oh, yeah, that was the other really cool thing. And one of our listeners, I forget her name, and I'm really sorry. She was so kind. She came to one of my panels on Friday, and then on Saturday she was at the reading too in that crowd. And at the panel on Friday after the panel, it was like on I think it was like the History of Sci-Fi panel or something where we were just talking about the different eras of science fiction, you know, and all that. And she came up at the end with some other people and she said that she listens to the show, and she said she keeps the 2013 Iron Bowl show on her phone, and when she gets down about something, she just plays that, and it picks her right up. And that made me so happy. I was just blown away by that. I thought that was so cool that you and I have – at least one person out there has had a positive, you know, has gotten something positive in their life thanks to our stupid show.
And I think if you could describe one episode in a certain way, I think the 2013 Iron Bowl episode is like pure joy.
Yes. Well, that's what she said. I remember it now that you say that. She said something like she loved the way that we had the Ode to Joy. We had that. So. But, you know, the other song that was big on that episode, because I've listened to it a couple of times since then, too, is Lorena by Morricone. That song that starts it out. If you folks out there haven't heard it, it's hard to get to on the player. I'm not sure that the player is a little like on the White Rocket page. But if you go to whiterocket.podbean.com, you kind of have to click back through a few pages. But if you do, you can find the 2013 Iron Bowl show still on the Podbean site. And you'll see what I mean. I used Errico Morricone's Lorena as a background while playing the famous Rod Bramblett, you know, touchdown call and everything. So the kick six. So anyway, that was really cool, and I really appreciated her coming to those two things and all the other Auburn people that came and everybody else. So, okay, do we have some listener questions?
We do. We have a few. Our first question is from Auburn Elvis, and he has a question I think that's on a lot mind of a lot of people. And he says, "Dear Wishbone Podcast, you probably already covered this, but would we have beaten Clemson if we used the Arkansas State game plan against Clemson? If so, how am I supposed to deal with that? I mean, we could be undefeated right now and think of the playoff discussion. Sometimes it sucks knowing the road not taken."
Two things. One, yes. Yes.
If we had used that game plan, we would have beaten Clemson.
Yes. Don't you think? If we'd hit him with Cameron Petway, if we'd had Sean White passing the whole game, if the offensive line had done like it did against Arkansas State.
Well, I mean, I don't think the offensive line's performance would have changed a whole lot, but I think the offense overall would have been much more effective if we played Sean the whole game. And you're right. I think we probably would have won. Now, all of those things that worked against Arkansas State wouldn't have worked. But yes, I mean, in hindsight, it's one of those things you could say if we'd have played Sean the whole game and not played Jeremy and John Franklin as much, we probably would have won. So.
We wouldn't have scored 51, but we might have scored 20.
Yes.
There you go. The other thing I wanted to mention there is that Auburn Elvis came to Dragon Con, and it was quite the AU Twitter and related. I mean, I watched the game with 8-Ball the Tiger, and I got to hang out a little bit with Auburn Elvis. But he came to a couple of panels, and I wanted to mention this. I wanted to thank him, too, because he brought me this gorgeous, like, lithograph print of his Sammy Coates Captain America cover. Have you seen that picture?
I have. It's awesome.
He brought me, like, a cardstock print of it suitable for framing, which I'm going to do. And I brought it back safe and sound in my suitcase. So it was cool to have my book signing line. I was right next to Michael Stackpole, who's a pretty famous sci-fi writer. You probably heard of him. You know this stuff. So Stackpole was to my left, and he had like a few people come up early on and get him to sign his books, and then he was just kind of sitting there. My people that came up brought me lithographs. It was awesome. So I had another guy come up in that line and talk about how much he loved Lucian and Baranak. So it was just quite the ego trip, Dragon Con this year. What are the questions we got?
All right, our next question is from Wardam Wade, who says, can we take and you kind of already answered this, but I wanted to hear your answer. Can we take much solace in the offense against the Sun Belt team? And if so, does it bring up more anger about the Clemson game?
Yeah, I mean, we got to close the book on that. You know, hindsight is 50-50, right?
What is that, Yogi Berra? Who says that?
Or Pat Dye. I think it was Pat Dye. Hindsight, 50-50. What can we do, you know? I mean, how many years have we looked back at the first couple of games under Gus and said, man, I wish he hadn't, you know, done this or that or the other? You know, I mean, think about it. The first game in 2013, our leading rusher was Corey Grant.
Mm-hmm.
No Trey Mason. So
it's so weird.
Yeah.
Our next question, we have two questions here. One, I wanted to go back to the question from last week that we asked because we said we wanted to have a better discussion about it. Are you ready for that?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Okay, this is from Phil Amthor, who really appreciated us asking this question last week. And his question was, after the Georgia game last year, Van said to John on the podcast, I'm coming to you with an open heart, and he basically asked if Gus could and should still coach. And I think this is a good time to ask it after witnessing the offense last night.
Yeah.
So he said, last Saturday, the Clemson game was the first time I actually doubted Gus, could stop overthinking, get out of his own head, etc., that he won't recover. It was a brief moment of doubt for which I'm embarrassed. My question is, what will Gus do with the offense going forward? Is not what Gus will do with the offense going forward. It'll get better. My question is about what Gus will do with his own mind going forward. This feels very personal for him. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what y'all think about his understanding of himself kind of existentially as a coach, I guess.
Right. I've thought about this a little bit since kind of blowing through it. And, you know, I had other things on my mind. I apologize to the listener who asked that question, because last episode I really had a lot of stuff on my mind and I was angry and frustrated. And
we got that.
right. And so I wasn't able to give a clear enough thought to it. But no. Upon further, I wish I had Barrett Salee's on further review. I agree with him. I think that one of the biggest challenges that Gus faces as a coach is that he's very stubborn. He's reluctant to admit, when things didn't go the way he thought they would, and he does over tinker sometimes. Now, a lot of that is what gives us the part of Gus that we like. You know, the genius, the mad scientist, the creative out of the box thinker. It's just that sometimes the chemicals in the lab bubble over and there's a chemical fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that turns you into the Flash and sometimes it just burns your skin off.
But so part of it is, I think the 2015 offense was so bad, and I think Gus felt bad because he hadn't had his hands on it so much that he tried to get into it too much. And I think the problem with the first game is you have too much time to overthink it, and especially when you have a huge game like this one, Clemson at home, it encouraged overthinking on Gus's part. And so I think he got inside his own head a little bit. I think as the season moves along, and you have to adjust to what you have and what the other teams are doing, then it's less of a problem.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think this season is going to crystallize pretty quickly now in terms of the offense, this team, and I don't think we're going to have to worry about it much anymore, hopefully. Now, if go horribly wrong against A&M, no telling what he might do, right? But
yep. Our next question is from Gus Rios, who asked, can Ray's helicopter sound transfer to Tony Stevens?
It's funny. I saw that. Was it because Stevens was...
See, he did kind of appear behind the defense a little bit.
Yeah.
He's got to do it in a bigger situation before we can go there, I think.
Well, the thing of it is, I'm looking now... Oh wait, it's down in my stashed away, no longer relevant files. So there you go. I'll play that once to commemorate him having his best game of his career, pretty much, right? surely that was his best game of his career.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah, and then we'll see if he can earn it moving forward. So,
Our last question comes from this guy who's on Twitter all the time named Van Plexico, who says...
He is on Twitter all the time.
That Stuart Mandel had said, basically, I can remember years where the SEC had three out of the top four teams or six out of the top 10. Today, yep. Alabama's number one, and the next highest rated SEC team is number 15. And so Van's question is, why is this so?
Well, somebody answered it right after that on Twitter and said it's because of the quarterback play, which I think is a pretty valid – it's one answer. That's not necessarily all the answer, but that is a valid answer. You know, in other words, people are looking at the quarterback play in the SEC and saying, you know, you guys aren't really that special right now because you don't have dominant quarterbacks. Ole Miss does, but they lost, you know, last week to Florida State horrifically. So, and of course, you know, Georgia's changing out their quarterbacks. LSU's changing out theirs. Two of the more hyped, you know.
Well, Alabama changing out theirs in the middle of that game.
Yeah, so. And, of course, ours is completely unsettled. Mississippi State having to start over. Arkansas. Now, I got to say, we'll talk about it in a second, but Arkansas quarterback play looked pretty darn good. We poo-pooed that, but the legacy there seems to be working.
Mm-hmm.
I think the quarterback play is one thing. I think the other answer, though, is that the teams – well, part of it is the SEC has struggled pretty mightily. I mean, my gosh, look at Georgia, look at Tennessee last week, look at Mississippi State. I mean, when you're struggling to beat Division I AA teams, the whole not just Auburn against Jacksonville State last year, but like the whole SEC outside of Alabama, the one exception, though, really has been Texas A&M. Texas A&M has bulldozed, you know, they beat a good UCLA team, and then they destroyed Prairie View. We don't know how good Prairie View is. I think that Texas A&M has lost the confidence of the voters just like we have. So Texas A&M is going to have to earn back the confidence. You know, in other words, A&M for a while there was a trendy team. People were like, oh, A&M is my dark horse national championship contender. Well, they'd lay an egg every time. They'd go 8-4, 8-5. And so A&M has not yet recovered their mojo with the voters. That's why, you know, in other words, if what I'm saying is if A&M had started at like 15 in the polls, they'd be a top 10 team right now, don't you think?
Sure, because teams have lost.
And they've won two impressive wins, more or less. Two different
kinds. Well, beating UCLA is impressive. The Prairie View thing means nothing.
Well, no, it means nothing, but they didn't go out there and beat them 26-24 either.
Sure, but I wouldn't give them a single vote based on that. I think the UCLA is the legitimate,
right,
really, really good team. They may win the Pac-10, Pac-12 or whatever. So,
and yet A&M beat them, and they're not in the top 15.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're right. I think it's that you're right in the sense that a lot of the teams that are out there have to earn it back with the voters. And the other team that was ranked really highly in the early, in the preseason was Ole Miss, and they lost. Blew that Florida State game. So
you could end up with several SEC teams pretty high up by the end of the season. It's just that half the SEC has fallen on their faces and barely beaten tiny little cupcake teams. And the other half of the SEC does not enjoy. I can't think of the term I'm looking for. The confidence of the voters. They don't get the benefit of the doubt. That's what I'm looking for. The benefit of the doubt. A&M got the benefit of the doubt there for a couple of years. They're not getting that anymore.
No.
You know, Florida used to get the benefit of the doubt. They're not getting that anymore.
Mm-mm.
That's another team, right? Florida's 2-0. Right. They played.
They annihilated Kentucky.
Exactly. See, in other years, a 2-0 Florida that annihilated Kentucky like that would be in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting the benefit of the doubt. So there's just several SEC teams that have struggled to win against lower ranked teams, and there are, which is why Georgia's not in the top 15. And there are several that have lost the benefit of the doubt, even though they've been winning, like Florida and Texas A&M. Did you know that Auburn is a favorite right now over Texas A&M?
Yes, I did see that.
So that just shows you they haven't got the benefit of the doubt anymore.
I mean, you're saying it like they are. Maybe they are really good, and the people just don't believe them or trust them. But I think part of it is they're just not that good. And that, I mean, you're talking about Florida and Texas A&M. I think they're both good teams, but they're not great teams.
Well, we're going to find out something on Saturday, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Well, I guess that rolls us on ahead. We're going to look ahead to the Texas A&M game. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. A&M, you know, they, again, like we said, they played two games. They beat UCLA in overtime, in a really good, talented UCLA team with an excellent quarterback that was at home. And then they crushed a Prairie View 62-0. They got the Oklahoma transfer, Knight at quarterback, and he looks pretty good, but, you know, not great. They're running the ball really well. They're playing good defense. They got a lot of good defensive linemen. I mean, Miles Garrett, but, you know, a couple other guys, too. They're making a lot of plays. And they got the, you know, the former LSU defensive coordinator now in his second year there. So their defense, you know, a couple of years ago was a train wreck and was, like, last in the SEC in every category and stuff. And they're not like that anymore. They're much more fundamentally sound. So, you know, offensively, they got big physical receivers. This is going to be another tough matchup for the Auburn secondary, kind of like the Clemson game, where they got a bunch of big, tall guys. Christian Kirk is excellent. He's not the biggest one, but they got a couple other guys that are big. And, you know, they're going to try and use them against the Auburn defensive backs and make plays. I think they're good on defense. They're not as good as Clemson on defense. And I think, you know, and Miles Garrett is a great player by himself. I mean, he can make, you know, get in the backfield and disrupt stuff. And we're going to have to be very aware of him. And I think in third and, you know, we don't have a you know, I like Austin Golson and Robert Leff, but neither one of them is a great pass protector. And so if we get in third and long kind of situations, we're going to have to help whoever, is, you know, Miles Garrett's side is on. We're going to have to put Chandler Cox over there to help them. And it'd be, so it's a two against one kind of thing, or the, you know, somebody else to help. They can't leave them one-on-one with him, or I think Sean White's going to get killed. But I do think our offense can move the ball on them. We can score some points. And I feel like our defense is, you know, playing really, really well, as you said, a bunch. And I think they're going to come up and show up in this game and make plays and, you know, hold A&M down.
Well, there's no question we should have beaten them in Auburn in 2014. It took all kinds of fluky junk for them to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But the visiting team has won the last four, which is pretty much the entire modern series going back to the Cotton Bowl in 85. So
we went down there last year and played our best game of the year against them.
Yeah. So it's just going to be a matter of protecting Sean White, getting some offense against their improved defense, and I think really like controlling their receivers, right? Because what do you make of their running game? You may have just said it, and I missed it.
It's much better than it has been. I mean, and remember, it's Noel Mazzone now. It's not the offense they had before. They're running that single back Noel Mazzone stuff, and they run the ball a lot more than they used to. I mean, I haven't looked at the percentage of time, but they're running the ball a higher percentage of the time than they have in the past. So, but I feel good about that. I think Auburn's defense could stop that. Can do a good job holding it down. And the quarterback is good, but he's not on the same planet as Deshaun Watson in terms of running or passing. So I feel like we ought to be able to, you know, get some pressure on him, disrupt him, get in his face. So I'm not worried about him. You know, he can run, but I'm not so worried about him running away from us and making plays. If we're chasing him around and he's running for his life, I think that's probably a good thing for us.
It's kind of weird to me to see Kevin Sumlin hiring a Noel Mazzone who has his own offense. I mean, I thought Sumlin was kind of like Gus. You know, he had his own thing that he likes to do.
It's a weird fit.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is, like, the passing part is still someone and the running part is Mazzone. Does that make sense?
It's kind of like if Gus hired Al Borges. You know?
Yeah, but Gus is always going to be the running part. But you're right, if you have Borges to be the passing game part, I don't know.
I don't know. Huh. Anyway, it's just odd. So How do we feel that game's going to come out?
I mean, I feel good. I mean, I think Auburn at home is going to play good defense, and that's going to keep us in the game. And I think we can make plays. I think the offense can make plays, and I think they have a lot of confidence in Sean and the running backs and the receivers. I think we can move the ball, and then I think it's going to be a close game, you know, like 28-24 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, 27-21, something like that. But I think Auburn can, you know, make the plays and do what we need to do to win the game. So, I mean, I really do. I feel like at home and with our defense, we ought to be able to handle them.
I'm more confident about the LSU game in a week than I am about this one. But our plan is we're going to put it up on the big screen down here in the basement since it's a night game. And hopefully at 6 o'clock it'll be, or 6:30, it'll be dark enough to watch it. But we're planning on getting down the basement, getting the nachos and stuff going, and we'll have a good time.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Let's just quickly look at some of the games coming up. You know that Florida, we already talked about Florida destroyed Kentucky. I just don't know what to say about Kentucky anymore. As somebody pointed out, it gives a whole new meaning to the term 30 for 30. They make 30 for 30 on 30 for 30, Florida and Kentucky, you know.
They're going to fire him after this year.
Good Lord, Kentucky, good Lord. South Carolina was the winner the first week. Mississippi State was the big loser, and yet Mississippi State beat South Carolina. So you just never know.
And I think Mississippi State kind of did, I mean, from what I've read, kind of did what Auburn did and kind of yanked their quarterback situation around in that first game. They got a lead, and then they took their starter out, put another guy in, and it kind of messed up their mojo. And they went back and picked one guy, played him the whole game, and I watched a little bit of that game, and he looked okay. So he's no Dak Prescott, but he's not terrible either.
You are. Arkansas's new quarterback looked pretty good. They went out and beat TCU, and get this, an Arkansas game that went to overtime. That never happened.
Wow. And they, you know, again, they made plays. Burt, the crazy two-point conversion call.
the reverse double pass to the quarterback. That's the high percentage play you want on a do or die play right there.
But I mean, TCU is a good, well-coached team, and they went out there and beat them. That's a big win for Arkansas.
It is a big win for Arkansas, and it's disturbing to me because I'd already written that up as a win, dang it.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech, Tennessee at the racetrack. That was just kind of weird. I watched some of it, and Virginia Tech got off to an early lead, and then they got outscored like 45-10 by Tennessee. I guess Tennessee woke up, right?
Well, Virginia Tech just kept shooting themselves in the foot. They were in solidly control, and then they fumbled it, and Tennessee recovered the fumble and then ran a couple plays and scored, and that kind of got their confidence up, and then they just kind of rolled them from there. So,
yeah. We already talked about LSU changing quarterbacks to a guy who went 6-14, so he's clearly the savior in Baton Rouge.
And whenever you can get a transfer from Purdue, you got to do that.
Vanderbilt scored 47 points in a tackle football game. I figured that was a basketball score.
Maybe the defense scored. I haven't looked at that. So.
And they had a cool gray uniform, gray helmet thing going. I mean, Vanderbilt's gotten really fancy in their uniform selection lately. I guess they figure if they can't necessarily always win on the scoreboard, they can win in the wardrobe or something. But they've really – I'm not going to say they're the Oregon of private schools in the SEC, but they're certainly up there. Ole Miss won. Who cares? Wofford, whatever. Alabama got their thing working with Western Kentucky. Not a bad team. We talked about Texas A&M. What was going on with Georgia that they nearly lost to Nichols?
I think it was a letdown thing. I mean, they got big SEC games coming up, and they played North Carolina last week. It was a natural letdown spot, and they let down. And, you know, new coach, and I think they tried to play the young kid at quarterback a lot, and he was, you know, blah, freshman. Yeah. And, you know, I think this team was ready for Chubb to run the ball, and he didn't do nearly as much. So Georgia's defense kind of slept walk around and let this team make a bunch of plays. So
Well, after the last 2 weeks, and this includes Georgia now, I feel like we could beat any team on our schedule on the right Saturday. Alabama's still Alabama. We don't know how good Western Kentucky or USC. Western Kentucky may have been a better team than USC this year, but at least where they're playing right now. But I feel like we could be in every game we play just because these other teams don't seem like they have anything going any better than we do.
Well, and I think, not to beat a dead horse, but I think our defense keeps us in every one of these games. I mean, again, like, I'm not scared of Georgia's quarterbacks at all. So I would just basically bring everybody up and play the run and dare them to beat us the same way you kind of would with LSU. So,
yeah,
you're right. I mean, that's a game that, like, their defense is good, but I don't think it's great. So,
upcoming games real fast. This past Saturday, yesterday, as we record this, was one of the worst television viewing college football Saturdays I've ever seen, because the only games worth watching the whole day all started at the same time as the Auburn game. I was so mad.
It was the middle of the afternoon, so it was terrible. I watched some of the Pitt-Penn State game at noon, and that was a great game. The 3:30 slot was terrible. So
yeah, Mississippi State at LSU. That's usually a fun game. LSU always wins, but it's usually a fun game for a while. Mm-hmm. Georgia comes up here to Mizzou. That could be fun. I mean, Georgia usually puts the hammer down, but I'm not putting anything. Missouri does not look horrible.
Nope.
And Georgia doesn't look great. So that could be an interesting game. I would love.
Well, and you could have the freshman quarterback on the road with his first SEC game. I mean, you never know what he's going to do.
And then there's Alabama at Ole Miss.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Oh, it's been a long time since we've gotten to play that, John. It's been a long time since I've gotten to do the lock of the week. Here's my lock of the week. You ready?
I'm ready.
Alabama will beat Ole Miss. Write it down, seal it, sign it. Was Ole Miss the team we said in the preview show could start the season like 1-4 and still end up, you know, like 8-4 or something like that?
Yeah.
So this is just filling right along there. They lost to Florida State. Having to play Florida State and Alabama, man.
Two out of your first three, that's pretty tough.
Wofford, Lord help Wofford. Ohio at Tennessee, who cares? Vanderbilt at Georgia Tech, the encyclopedia throwing bowl. I don't care. East Carolina at South Carolina. East Carolina might as well join the dang SEC or the ACC because they play everybody in it around.
They beat NC State last weekend. South Carolina better watch out.
I turned on that game and I said, oh, Lord, it's NC State. It's the black hole of football interest. Remember?
Yes.
I mean for this to become a thing. I want this to become a thing. My goal is that NC State fans start hate tweeting me, and I have to start blocking NC State fans on Twitter like I block Alabama fans. But I'm serious. NC State is like a null field. They are a dead zone of football interest. All you have to do is insert NC State into any college football conversation or viewing situation, and all the excitement and interest just drains out of it. Just drains out. It's just a fact. It's a fact. East Carolina at South Carolina, South Carolina better find a way to win that, or they're going to be looking for their next coach soon. New Mexico State, Kentucky, good Lord, I don't care. North Texas at Florida. Florida better win that. I'm sure you have things to say about these guys, but I don't think you care that much, and I'm trying to move along. Texas State, Arkansas is going to win. You have any thoughts on any of those?
No, I'm interested to see Mississippi State and LSU and maybe Ole Miss just because we're playing those teams soon, and want to see what happens in those games. But
so we got a good game at 11, a good game at 2:30, and a good game at 6, so that's all I ask for. Even if it's just three good games the whole weekend, as long as they're back-to-back-to-back, I don't care. I don't have to change the channel, so that's what we got.
Well, there's some good non-SEC games this week, like Florida State at Louisville this week. So.
Yeah, that's the good 11 o'clock game. That's right. All right, I think we're way over time. Let's get out of here. Any final thoughts before Auburn plays Texas A&M, the Collie Dogs?
No, but we haven't beaten them at home. Yeah, we've played them twice at home, and once they destroyed us, and once we destroyed ourselves, and we owe them the full Jordan-Hare experience. We owe them a nice visit and a good whipping. So,
yes, that would be so nice. I hope so. I hope so. We'll see what happens. We got our offensive legs under us now. We're ready to rock and roll. All right, it's going to be time for to wrap things up as always. John, all I can ever tell you at this point in the show is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.